Welcome to the Building BN podcast, where we take an inside look at Bloomington Normal economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners. Hosted by your BN EDC. I always like to start things off by, you know, asking our guests how you ended up here in Bloomington Normal, but I think you might be a townie.
I'm a townie.
Okay, so you started here.
I started here. It's true. Yeah. No, my parents grew up in by Kankakee, Illinois, a small town outside of that. Went to Hersher High School, and my dad went to U of I. My mom came here to ISU, and after they graduated and got married, they both took teaching positions here in Central Illinois. So my mom here in Unit 5, and my dad at Lexington.
Okay.
So I, born and raised here, man. Nice. In the same home. Parents still live about six blocks from where we're sitting right now.
Very
and,
cool.
There was a time where I probably wasn't grateful for that, as a 41-year-old father of three, I'm pretty grateful for that history and getting to be here for a long time.
Yeah, I remember that transition myself, too, being like, I don't want your advice, and all of a sudden, once I had kids, I'm like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, it's pretty great you're here.
Yeah, it's awesome that you're
thanks
here.
Thanks for still talking to me despite what I've done
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, what I've done. So what high school did you go to around here?
I went to the original Normal Community High School, so what is now Kingsley Junior High.
Yes.
Was the high school building that I was a part of. But I was actually technically a wild man or an iron cat. So I, at the time, ag classes were only taught at Normal West.
Okay.
Might still be that way. But so every day they would actually bus me, and I would spend a portion of my day at Normal West and start my day at Normal. And as I got older and went through the 4 years of high school, I ended up my junior, senior year spending half my day at West and half my day at Normal. Because I was kind of orienting some of my class and coursework towards agriculture. And then they were like, we can't bus you back and forth, so you're taking PE and math year two. So I'm fortunate I got to meet a lot of people and be connected with a lot of folks pretty early on, which benefits me now. I had no clue what I was doing.
Yeah, then, well, that's part of it, and you're trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So yeah, after that from high school, where'd you end up?
Yeah, so, man, when I was graduating high school, like most 18-year-olds, I had a great plan. But I'm obviously being facetious, I was a weird mix of I had some incredible experiences through, like, FFA and agriculture where that was a path to being able to use this love and passion for design. So landscape design it was a path that I was heading down. Construction was a path I was heading down. I was the kid as a seventh grader on field trips was drawing scale floor plans. I didn't have a Game Boy.
Sure.
I had a scale and a mechanical pencil. And for whatever reason, I've just always been fascinated about space and design and how that affects humans. And so I was heading in that direction, but I also had some really incredible experiences in my faith community. And a lot of people had seen a lot of leadership in me as a young man and said, have you considered ministry? And so I was torn between going into vocational ministry or going into landscape design or construction. And so I found I'd had some experiences at like camps and retreat centers as a kid.
Okay.
And I saw the integration of really great design with that spiritual pursuit and experience. And I was like, I want to create those. And there's one organization in particular called Young Life. It's an international organization. And I had worked at these really incredible camps and retreat centers during my summers. And so I was like, I'm going to go do that. I ended up getting a bachelor's degree from like 17 different colleges around my bachelor's transcript.
Sure. No, yeah. Similar.
Because I hobbled together a degree in Bible and theology with a minor in landscape design and construction management.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting combo.
Through Moody Bible Institute is who gave me my bachelor's, but I got sort of half of that credit at Parkland in their landscape design construction management program. And met my wife here when I was in town for a portion of that. She went to ISU. She's smarter and wiser and had a path. And so I wanted to go work at these Young Life camps. And she drew a 60-mile radius around her family farm between Champaign and Danville. And there were none of those camps there. Hmm. But I really wanted to marry her. And so we ended up sticking here in Bloomington Normal after college and getting married. And she became an audiologist, worked at OSF, so she was commuting over to Peoria.
Okay.
And I stayed here and started off as a landscape designer, and then an interior designer, working kitchen and bathroom remodel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within a year and a half or so into my adult life, I was feeling like I was too far on that spectrum, and I wanted to get more towards ministry or more towards something more altruistic, I guess. I was young and didn't know how that work that I was doing could be is impactful in the way that I maybe understand it now. So I pivoted hard, and because my wife asked me, like, when was the last time you really loved the work you were doing? And I said, I loved working out at the Easter Seals Camp. So Timber Point, out of Lake Bloomington. So working with kids and families with disabilities. And I knew every day when I went home that what I did mattered.
Yeah.
And I was young and I couldn't make that connection
with the
in the other work. And so I pivoted pretty hard and started working at the Baby Fold.
Oh.
Here in town with special needs kids. On the pervasive developmental delays, autism spectrum disorders, and just saw some incredible humans who show up every day and love kids right where they're at and help them grow. And a lot of those people are still there today, like saints. I mean, people who are the backbone of our you know, community, like just meeting the needs. And so I found some meaning and purpose there, ended up getting my first grad degree in special education. And,
okay.
There was a shortage at the time. So Leroy Schools actually agreed to hire me as a teacher before I had my teaching certificate.
Okay.
Gary Tipsword, who most of our community knows is incredibly meaningfully impacted our community in terms of rewriting school funding bills for our state of Illinois, for advocating for not just financing, but for programs like BACC and you know, we've got the Heat Academy as well that is, he has taken a front and center role at kind of championing that. Well, he saw something in me as a 22-year-old punk and hired me despite not having, like, he had to pay a fine to hire me.
Oh, really?
Because I wasn't certified.
Okay.
And that, within that year, through a series of events, I saw that, took my experiences from the Baby Fold, saw what was happening in not just Leroy, but in other rural schools, and was like, man, we could be doing better for certain groups of kids.
Sure.
And, one day I kind of was pretty passionate and frustrated about a certain thing that happened. And I was kind of sharing that, with Gary, who was pretty intimidating to me, and he said, well, what would you do different? And I was like, I just, like, word vomited a bunch of things. And he said, why don't you do that then? And I was like, what? He's like, why don't you start your own school? Okay. And I walked out the door. And Patrick, this is probably where you and I are a little too similar. I went home and wrote a 12-page proposal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. And I put that on his desk, you know, a couple weeks later, and he said, let's do it.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what? I just like making proposals in PowerPoints, you know? I've got to do that. Yeah, you want to do it? What? And he's like, you don't know this. Actually, it's not public yet, but I'm becoming the superintendent of schools here. Uh-huh. And I agree with what you're sharing, and I believe in you. I think we should do this. And so there I was. I was 23 then. And took the next year meeting with school boards, moving this thing forward. And then when I was 25 years old, we started a school, built a building. A gentleman in Leroy caught the vision of what I was dreaming to do for kids. Mm-hmm. And he said, here's this piece of land I've got. Here's a 40 by 60 building. Draw straight lines on the interior. And tell me what you can afford to rent, and I'll figure it out.
Wow.
And I'm, you know, proud to say that school's still going.
Yeah.
And so 2008, we started the Leroy Preparatory Academy.
Okay.
And it was a school for kids who needed school to look different, junior high and high school in our rural schools. So everything from Clinton and Tri-Valley over to, you know, obviously Leroy, Ridgeview, Hayworth, Blue Ridge, Lexington. And so... Yeah, man, it was a pretty, and it was kind of like, I had to get a degree to keep the job I'd weaseled my way into. Yeah. I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Same. I had to go back to school right away and get another grad degree, in educational leadership and administration, to kind of keep the job I had,
got into,
created for myself. And
well, it's a beautiful marriage of your backgrounds. I mean, that's yeah. like where you're taking like what you were passionate about for. And you said, you know, at the time, which I can see. You know, being younger, probably didn't realize that beautification does impact your community.
It does.
Oh, massively. And then, you tie
and
that back
individual
to
people's lives. Oh, yeah. I mean, we did, you know, I look back now and I was really, I wasn't just trying to do things different for different sake. I really cared about these kids. And I saw some of the challenges they had in their own lives that they didn't get to make those choices. Right. I'm now having to react to some of maybe the behaviors and things they'd learned. But I wanted to put color on the walls.
Yeah.
I wanted to look at furniture and how could that be different to impact the way we engage with students. I took away the Mr. Osinga and it was all first names for the adults because a lot of these kids had negative relationships with adults.
Sure.
And so we wanted, it was built on a relationship of trust and respect. And I wanted them to work with their hands. I wanted to take as much creativity and flexibility with what the state requires for graduation and use that to engage these kids and to point them into a meaningful life. And, man, I'm really grateful we got to do that. That led to pretty quickly being asked, you know, hey, would you come and speak at my school? Sure. and then that turned into a sort of a consulting practice that started then in education and continues to this day that I still do consulting. And in fact, we were joking before we were on mic, I guess, that we've always had multiple jobs.
Yes.
I actually did all the landscape design for LKM Mowing and Landscaping in my spare bedroom of my apartment, paying my way through those two grad programs at
okay.
night. So my wife's getting her doctorate. I'm getting these master's degrees. I'm you know, to design the entrance to Ironwood Subdivision, you know, like the, and then I'm waking up and going in and teaching and going to school. That's just, we had our heads down and then woke up and we've got a couple kids and, and we're, my wife ended up coming here to ISU, working in the speech and hearing department at ISU and now runs the clinic for the audiology program. So she's now helping doctoral students get their clinical experiences before they go into the profession. And so we're really grateful to be back here in the community, raising our kids. And Leroy gave me just so many incredible experiences. Again, I didn't know what I was learning as I'm learning it. But I was sitting in school board meetings for 7 years.
Wow.
Every month. And I'm talking about TIF agreements.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about EAV. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about how something that's good for business has to be good for the school district, has to be good for the tax base, right? How long-term in capital investments that have long-term value adds. I mean, all of this stuff. I was most of the time just like, God, I'm so tired. I just want to go home. Yeah. Why am I even here? I have this dinky little school. Like, But in God's grace, you know, was allowed to be there and be getting just so much access to how the world works and how communities work that largely impact how what I do today. But, you know, in that time also, I remember we were renovating the elementary school and the junior high, you know, trying to make a better physical environment for kids to learn. And that was obviously a big passion of mine. So they had tasked me to help lead and coordinate that. And so I got to go with some of our architects, you know, to see these showrooms up in Chicago at Merchandise Mart and up in Grand Rapids, where apparently all furniture in the United States is made in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
The big companies are all there. So we toured these and my mind was just on fire because I'm like, there's something in me that is made for how humans interact with their environment and what that can do. What aesthetic can do to their emotional and to their physical and their relational well-being. And so I was like, we got to do some really neat projects, but there was something in me where like, there's more for me here. And I was the, you know, when Gary and I talk about the school, I was the right guy to start it turns out I'm not the right guy to run it. Not that I mean, I think I did okay, but there are other people who are better at stewarding things for the long term. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are better and more wired for catalyzing
yep.
things. And I've learned that I'm a great catalyst.
Yep.
And I'm great at walking alongside other leaders as a coach, consultant, mentor. But for me to be the day-to-day out front managing operations, you know, this is pre-EOS awareness for
sure,
me,
sure.
But like I'm the visionary, turns out.
Yeah.
I'm not the implementer. But I learned those things through the hard realities of life. And, you know, let's see. Yeah, two kids. You know, working at the school, I started making short films.
Oh, wow.
Went and did like a couple documentary style things out at Google and Microsoft, and trying to look at these really innovative companies mm-hmm. and go like, what are they doing about their culture and their environments that we could learn in public education? And so Gary and I got to go around and speak and kind of share about some of those things that have largely shaped a lot of even what's in the Heat Academy
sure.
today. And my wife one day, and people can go out and watch my TEDx talk about this, but one day was like, she told me that she felt like she didn't know me anymore. And all of a sudden I'm, you know, from a career standpoint and from, you know, wife and kids and home that we love and community and all that kind of stuff, there was so many things that were great, and yet I was doing too much.
Sure.
And I was the last one to notice.
Got caught up in it.
Yeah. And so that really pivoted some things for me that ended up translating into some career shifts, but also into some personal shifts, and really did a deep dive, kind of figuring out, okay, I'm probably 29, okay. 30 at that point in time, and looking at my life and going, what have I learned here?
Yeah.
What should I keep?
You're right.
What should I get rid of? Ultimately led to me, you know, transitioning over 2 years out of the school world and into the business and more consulting world. One of my longtime consulting clients was a company called Cybernautic,
mm-hmm.
and my best friend, Chad Parker, who I think you've interviewed
yep,
on this, right?
Yeah, another amazing story.
He started that company when he was 18 years old, and I'd been walking alongside him as a friend, and we were in each other's weddings and that kind of stuff. But eventually turned into helping him, just having someone other than his team to talk to about the business.
Sure,
and,
sure.
So for 8 years, I worked as the vice president of Cybernautic alongside him, helping to grow and shift some culture and some mm-hmm. organizational structure and just business development, advocating for the company in the community, that sort of thing. But also I never was full time. So I knew there was something in me that has this entrepreneurial, coaching, consulting bent mm-hmm. that, was really important. And for those first 4 or 5 years of that company, I was really, y'all would probably see me at the Hound or the Coffee House or the Hound or the Coffee House
yeah.
or the Rock. And I would have 3 or 4 meetings a day with people, helping them figure out, because I had learned a lot of in my journey of mm-hmm. who am I and what am I best at. In God's grace, he opened up a lot of opportunities for me to walk alongside others. And so, you know, made an online course that a few thousand people have been through, helping them find clarity in their calling.
Oh, nice.
Did a lot of career coaching with college students who are like, I think I want to change my major, but I'm right. going to graduate in 6 months,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
or
what am I gonna do with this?
Whatever it is. And so, I would meet with folks and, a lot of times they'd know what they need to do.
Right.
But they were too afraid to do it. And I was cheesy and I had these hall passes
yeah.
that I had made perforated at the copy shop. And it said, hey, I used to be a school principal. And so if you're looking for someone to give you permission
yeah.
you said these 3 things, and I'd bullet point them out. I'd sign it and say, don't call me until you do it.
Uh-huh.
But I'll meet with you again if you do this. And
right.
if not, that's up to you. Right. And so a lot of fun conversations and relationships that were built in that season. And you know, been able to help other companies rebrand, help them evaluate, you know, mission, vision, core value, goals. In that process with Cybernautic, we were looking for a new headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't just want to have any building. We wanted something that kind of matched our weird techie vibe. and that was unique maybe and different than just drywall. Right. And so we started looking at all sorts of buildings downtown, all over town, and got connected with Andy Kaufman at Catalyst Construction, sure. who had just done some really neat projects around town. And everyone, not everyone, me as a designer was just like, they do cool stuff.
Yeah, do some more of that.
and so I just, do you know of anything? And he invited me to come and tour this old building in downtown Bloomington that a gal named Vivian Kong here in our community had and still has a big vision for a modern food hall.
Okay.
Making it more easy for startup restaurants to be able to showcase what they think they've got mm-hmm. and to get started, you know. And so she had worked with an architect in town named Russell Francois,
sure.
who, again, you want to – I mean, since I was a high schooler, I started noticing certain projects, and I was like, man – those are legit.
Yep.
And come to find out, it's Russell Francois. So I think as like a senior in high school, I wrote him a thank you note because I was just like, I don't know who you are. And I still honestly have never met him.
Oh, okay.
but I appreciate what you've done to shape our community, right? And so he had done this beautiful hand drawing of this old 36,000 square foot Dodge Brothers dealership built in 1926. First floor food hall, second floor was a wide open slate. And her thought, Vivian's, was, hey, what if a company would come in here and maybe run a co-working space out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And we had used co-working spaces in Chicago through WeWork, yep. Philadelphia. We'd seen cool things done in Champaign, Peoria, and we're like, yeah, we're well suited to probably do that. Went and walked through it, and Chet was like, no. it wasn't for him at that time, and he had always had a dream of another building in town, which we did eventually acquire and renovate. But I just fell in love with that building. And through my whole like self-discovery process, I had learned potential is like the word for me.
Mm.
Helping others reach their potential, helping things reach their potential, helping spaces reach their potential. And 36,000 square feet of blank open canvas, I was just, what can we do here?
Right.
And kind of went everywhere with that and was inviting people in who had, they had a church plan or they wanted to do a wedding venue or they wanted a dance studio or whatever it was. And eventually Andy was like, have you ever thought about getting your real estate license?
Yeah.
'Cause this is essentially what they do. And
yeah.
I was like, well, I've thought about that, but I had some reasons why I didn't think that was best for my family and I, but Andy then went on to say, if you were to do that, I think we could work on some really beautiful things together and shape our community in some really neat ways. And, it was just one of those moments where there was something about him
mm-hmm.
and his character and the way he led Catalyst and his family that I just really admired and still do.
Yep.
And I went home and told my wife and she was, she was like, well, everyone's potty trained. So I think, why don't you go ahead and get your license and let's just see what happens, And so that was 6 years ago.
Okay.
And pretty soon after that, started doing some consulting with Catalyst as they were starting to grow, mm-hmm. Looking at their leadership team and structures. And so then started, this sort of weird merge of where my world was becoming less and less career coaching and becoming more and more working with businesses and organizations to dream about their physical space
mm-hmm.
or redeeming these old buildings or whatever it was. And that world grew and got to the point where I knew I want to figure out I need to make a change before my wife tells me.
Right.
And so just this last year in January or the start of this year, I guess, left Cybernautica as a staff member,
mm-hmm.
still doing some consulting with their leadership team. There were people who were better suited to do the day-to-day things that were the company needed
sure.
that I was in the way of. And so I was able to leave and make space for them and able to transition into working with Catalyst now in business development and on a more full-time basis. And between consulting and real estate and now real estate development,
mm-hmm.
There's just this whole sort of nucleus of energy
right.
around building a brighter Blono
yep.
That I just get to walk alongside businesses and organizations and dream how to steward their resources and accomplish their goals, and how can space and the built environment help to add value to them and to our community. And
well, it's all the same, you know, nexus of, you know, industry, but they're all still three jobs. Still got the consulting, still got the real estate on the side, and real estate development is its own animal.
Oh, my goodness, and you and I know that.
Yes. So. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, so, like, yeah, going back through all of it, back to even whenever you're, you know, first getting in down at Leroy, it's that's like the best experience-based learning. They don't teach that in school.
No, no. And in fact, they didn't. I mean, every paper I wrote was just like, here's what I dealt with today. Like, if I had to write behavioral management strategies, right? I was like, well, here's what we're doing. Yep. If I had to write about budgeting, like, well, here's what we did. If I, that's for me, something about being dropped in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah,
is the best way for me to learn. It might not be for everyone,
right?
But I'm gonna still do the, like, the flywheel is gonna be going while I'm gonna start another flywheel that's going another direction.
Yeah.
Is just when I look back over my 41 years, there's a theme there of that tends to be kind of how it works.
Yeah. No, I mean, you mentioned it before. I mean, the whole potential, like being able to see, I guess, seeing something either in others or in buildings or in communities that it doesn't see in itself, and then how do you take it from A to B? And most people, they can't see B anyway, or they can't see that A in themselves could get somewhere else. So they kind of get stuck in, you know, who they are, or even as a community, who we are. So, having visionaries and then having, I guess, the method to get there. And so, yeah, that catalyst is a perfect name.
Yeah, well, and it embodies really what we are set out to do.
Yeah.
And trying to do that in a really transparent way that stewards other people's resources, built on relationships, and just also a lot of hard work and high character. What's been fun is I get to help shape and be a part of building a company at Catalyst, but that company was already built and shaped such a way that aligned with who I am and how I believe that is the best way to engage the world in any context, not just construction services, right? And I'm super grateful for that and getting to be a part of that legacy.
And for us, I mean, here at the EDC, like the outcome of your work, I remember like just the Northwest Mutual building now, but the former CTU East, like coming to town and driving through the main corridor and being like, what is that? Like, it's so disappointing, you know, on that drive that is like one of the main thoroughfares, like the artery of the community, and you're seeing a blighted property. And you guys came in and, you know, with your vision, you know, you figured it out and you sold, and it's amazing. I drive by it now. I'm like, how do we do that again? So it's like going back to your experience-based learning, thinking outside the box, implementing design. I mean, I believe in a community that beauty is a right, and you can do so much more for cleaning up your own backyard, especially in the heart, compared to some of the, you know, the sprawl or the building out. I know it's easier. Like what you guys do is hard, which is why the incentives are so important. But it makes a much bigger impact, not just on the bottom line dollars, but the overall vibe and feel of the community.
I went to some of the, I don't even remember what thing you put on. But there was a statement that is the quality of place as an economic driver. It was the subtext. Yeah. And I'm sure in the EDC world, that's just like how everyone talks.
It is now. It wasn't always that way.
I heard that and I was like, the quality of place as an economic and as a relational driver, because what I've seen is beauty, you know, there's artists love to say beauty will change the world, right? Can change the world. And I believe that's true. You and I both have enough artists in us, right? That we've seen that, we've experienced that. But when like perfect strangers would hug me in elevators or come up to me on the street and say thank you, or, you know, friends of friends will be like, did you do about one building, and the way that here's what I realized is how our community presents itself to others is also how it presents itself to ourselves.
And it
shapes our own identity. And so I think each of us have a need to have meaning and purpose. We're created that way. And there is something about redemption, yeah. about recreation. I love the prefix RE that it's just, it speaks my language because I think it speaks human language.
Sure.
And so when we redeemed, or at least had a, played a role in redeeming that one building, mm-hmm. It, because of its prominence as you come in from the south side of town, it was like we put the drain plug in the bathtub and poured more water, and all boats rose with yeah. the tide.
Yes.
Not significantly, right? We're not overflowing, but like it incrementally helped.
Yes.
And not just helped in an economic way, but helped in a cultural, spiritual, relational identity way for our community that I in theory believed was true.
Yeah.
But the practical overflow of that that I've experienced from people's reactions and appreciation for the building, at least how it presents exterior. Hopefully those who are living interior and working there every day feel the same way. We've gotten good feedback there also, but man, that was a weird kind of drug because it's like I knew it was possible and I knew that it would have more meaningful impact than mm-hmm. what just paper and pencil and spreadsheets
show.
It's been good because we've had it's hard.
No, it's very hard.
It's really
if it was easy,
hard.
Everybody would do it. Yeah, I mean,
that is a direct quote from Ralph Endress, another real estate developer who's really shaped our community. And he's like, man, Robbie, if it were easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
And though we've learned some things, each project has a whole different set of circumstances. Yes. And we have more tools and maybe some more context, but I don't know that we're yet to say we have more confidence.
Yeah. No, it's one where that's the partnership side between the public and the private. And it takes somebody to have a vision to go in there and be like, here's what we're thinking. Is there a way that we can close this gap to yep. like not eliminate, but reduce the risk, you know,
yeah.
on our end or anybody's part in order to keep doing what you guys did. And it goes back to, I mean, I think my dad was a police officer in Decatur, but there
right.
was this broken window theory that if
yeah.
you were living in a neighborhood with a lot of broken windows, there was no pride.
Mm.
So you go through and you clean up those.
Yep.
It has a better impact than creating a brand new building.
It does.
So yeah, whenever you do the redemption, remodel, or whatever you want to
yeah.
call it, revitalization
yep.
of a building and a core, like holy, I mean, it will pay dividends. And it is that quality of place equals better quality of life. And it wasn't always that way. Before, the focus was, you bring in the big business and then
yeah.
all the people will follow. Well, I think it was Richard Florida. He had wrote a book and talked about how, you know, you're getting the brain drain. People are leaving, going to the places that had better quality of life, regardless if there were jobs or not. And
yeah.
it's like completely reverse of, I mean, over my time.
Again, the spreadsheet.
Oh,
it's not it.
It's
a part of it.
It's a part of it. But, you know, we all have our biases because, I mean, it's not traditional economics says that we're all going to go after the dollar. It's all
yep.
dollar and utility. And then behavioral economics says way opposite. Like, you have to drill that down. And
so I'm an elder statesman of the millennial generation.
Okay.
And so, you know, we were largely shaped by, you know, tremendous economic growth in our lifetime and in
mm-hmm.
our parents' lifetime, generationally, like, significant climbs, right? But we're also shaped by a lot of latchkey kids and
mm-hmm.
a lot of folks who went into a lot of college debt with this guaranteed of this American dream. And then when that didn't pan out in 2008 or
yeah.
or whatever the dot-com bubble or whatever
yeah.
it is,
whichever
yeah one they may have been caught up in or been affected by, and then also seeing you know, just the negative impacts of war and, you know, being raised in that environment. I think there was a lot of questions more than answers in our generation as millennials, where we had this bent towards experiences and this bent towards quality of life
mm-hmm.
and this bent towards maybe college isn't fully
right.
the only path
mm-hmm.
to success, health, whatever it is. And then, man, Gen Zs, they read right through that.
Yeah.
Like there's
yep.
X-ray vision, man,
yep.
Looking through. And so they're making decisions a lot differently.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I love my young friends and getting to spend time with them and learn from them. But they value different things. Yes. I mean, we're still the Midwest, and so there's still we're always going to have pride in home ownership, mm-hmm. and you know, debt is bad, and you know, there's going to be some things sort of stitched into our DNA to an extent. But they're doing it differently, and trying to be cognizant of that. And you know, I'm really grateful for our in particular. I get to work with both the city staff at City of Bloomington and the Town of Normal staff, and their economic development teams, and their city managers, the folks who are in the building and zoning and planning. We couldn't do any of these things without their help and their willingness to catch vision.
Yep.
You know, they go to these conferences all over and they hear these big cities doing these crazy, yeah. amazing things. And so when we bring an idea forward, they're by and large, they're like, how can we help you get that done?
Nice.
And so we're super grateful for that. But, you know, we built out that warehouse. That's the Grove and Prairie building. So yes. That was one of our first projects. And we've got a handful of different tenants in there and some co-working. And then now the Northwestern Mutual building, you know, at least the Northwestern team's in there, and we're starting to move tenants into the apartments. So I went to Rosie's on Friday for lunch with one of the guys in the co-working office.
Okay.
And then I'm sitting at a table next to a gal who works in the Northwestern Mutual office, and her husband's meeting her for lunch. And then there's one of the Northwestern Mutual reps who's grabbing lunch with one of the insurance guys from the Grove and Prairie building.
Yep.
And 80% of the tables were tenants and were folks who intentionally came and caught our vision and moved downtown. And I'm just sitting there almost in tears, man.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
like, holy cow.
Yep, you can literally see the ripple effect in person. Like it's beyond the spreadsheet.
It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, it's for us at the EDC. It's like we had the group from Axis on, you know, yeah. the last podcast, and it's
yeah.
like you guys are the economic developers.
Oh man,
here we at the EDC. We're trying to create an environment where you're going to be successful.
Yeah,
how can we make the tools? How can we just be the conduit to get your vision there? Like yeah. we're nothing but gap fillers. It's just information relationship. You guys are the ones
yep.
boots on the ground doing the deals. We're just trying to work with the state and locally to be like, how can we keep you going?
Oh man, when you look at you know, what Greg Yount and John Albee and now Megan, Laura, we stand on the shoulders of these. We don't have there's only a handful of us who do commercial real estate
yeah.
in town. And you look at the conversations that we have as brokers, as we're trying to get a deal done, as we're trying to help businesses relocate or move to the community, and how early we're brought in on some of those conversations, because mm-hmm. space is often a big part of
yeah.
things coming here and working with you guys on these things. And man, I'm so grateful to have Megan and Laura in particular, their leadership and humility and track record of what
oh,
they've
yeah.
done.
Yep.
And they've been kind enough to mentor me all the way through this, and so I'm so proud of them for jumping out and starting what they have, and think they do an incredible job. And I look down at the projects I'm working on now, and I'm working with them,
yeah.
not all of
yeah.
them, right? So.
That's great. So like, okay, so here's a nice little transition. If you do have a prospect in town, besides showing them, you know, all of Megan and Laura's buildings,
sure.
where are you taking them for the perfect day in Bloomington Normal, just to show off the community on why they need to be here?
Yeah, well, it's really fun that I get to invite them into my physical spaces that I've
yeah,
created,
yep.
right? So I love starting at Grove and Prairie.
Okay, yeah.
I love walking them through the history of the building, because it's an easy transition into the history of our community. You've been there, right?
Yes,
we walk up
awesome.
The stairs, and at the coffee bar, we've got this giant mural of it's a 1930s aerial photograph of downtown Bloomington.
Right.
And it's fun to sit there and grab a cup of coffee and look and see that the foundation of the first tower of the State Farm building is being built while the photograph
okay.
was taken.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
And then to talk about the impact that that organization has had on our community, and to talk about and to look and see the things that were there that are no longer there.
Right.
And to the things that are still there, right? You know, good friends of mine owned the McBarnes building. It just turned 101 years old on July 4th, right? And it's wow. it's right next door to us. And like, man, and that's been like 14 different things yeah. in its life. Yeah. And so it, I love starting with that foundation and then being able to walk over. And then everyone wants to, especially right now, everyone wants to see the Northwestern Mutual building.
Yes.
And they want to get inside and see what we're doing there. And then they want to know what else are you working on? And to the extent we're able to share them, you know, we're able to take them out to New Way, or Nussbaum
mm-hmm.
And look at, these companies that have grown for decades.
Yeah.
But in particular, you know, Nussbaum and New Way both, and just the role that logistics plays mm-hmm. in our community that, that specifically speaks to how centrally located
yes.
we are and how interconnected we are. You know, out at New Way right now, we're building a massive building that is specifically to meet the needs of Ferrero.
Yep.
And to talk about. And I'm so grateful for all that Rivian has brought to our community, but I'm quick to advocate for Ferrero. Like, yeah. You know, their impact on our economy is significant.
Oh yeah.
And we're at the table for some of their conversations just because we're helping, you know, plan and yep. build for them
yep, for the next round.
And so it's exciting, right? Yeah. To show that, you know, taking them to see. Whether it's multifamily or some of the subdivisions that are being expanded and just talking about, I think part of my role is both an advocate for vision and what we've got here, but also to advocate and to communicate how hard it is.
Yeah.
People are like, why don't we have more single family homes? And as a guy who's been a part of trying to get streets and storm sewers and, mm-hmm. and infrastructure, either whether it's into an infill site or extended out to expand a subdivision, greenfield development, these things are not fast.
Yeah.
They're not cheap. Lending has gotten tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do my best. I feel like it's part of my job is to advocate and to give them a sense of reality of like, it's happening. It's happening slower than maybe some would like to see it happen. But it's actually happening really fast.
Right.
There are only, I think, 16 single family home permits in the town of Normal right now.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound like we've got enough, right?
Right.
But when you see the subdivisions and the expansions of subdivisions moving through both Normal, Bloomington, you look at Hayworth, Lexington, yep. Leroy, you know, and where these satellite communities are also looking to expand, they're getting there.
Right.
They are going through the plan review process. They're mm-hmm. going through the planning commission process and the town council process. They're annexing land. They're right. All of this stuff takes time. And I'm just on a few projects I'm working on. We've spent 2.5-3 years just to get them to plan review.
Yeah. Yeah, it does not happen overnight.
That's not shoveling the ground. That's not cast iron pipes yeah. going in, right?
That's getting permission.
That's just getting permission
to get a building
to potentially go get lending to do this.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I was that guy. I was like, why aren't we doing this? Because I didn't get it.
You're
didn't
not in the
know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of my job, I feel like, is to show, hey, this looks like an empty field now, or this looks like a torn down building now. But here's what we're working on. To the extent I'm able to share,
sure.
Or to take them, I love to take them some places and dream.
Yeah.
I love to go, we still have some blighted buildings in downtown. We still have some infill lots, which I think are the most economical and the ripest opportunities in our community. And I take them, and to most people, right, they'd be like, why am I looking at these weeds?
Yeah.
Or why am I looking at this nearly abandoned building, right? But I'm there just spitting vision.
Mm-hmm.
What if? Imagine, and thankfully we get to start in some projects that were what ifs.
Yeah,
and they got to see like, okay, these
record,
could get
yeah.
done. It's a very small track of
yeah,
record, but
still,
it's there. And so they're willing to engage with me on that, and they're willing to trust me to some extent to dream on their behalf on those sites. And so for me, that's kind of how my day rolls.
Nice. No, it's a cool day. I mean, it's nice to be able to drive around and see not only what's here and what's changed is over. I mean, I've only been here 4 years, and seeing what's changed already is amazing.
Yeah.
But again, having the opportunity to talk to people on what could be.
Yep. And what will be. Like, you get to see some of these things that before they're out there. And I tell you all the time, Patrick, every time I see you, hey, we're all making million-dollar decisions based off of what you say. So please know that. Yep. And we're listening.
That's literally why we did the housing study. And, you know, where people are saying, well, why don't we have more housing? It's like, we knew this was coming way before, but due to NDAs, we couldn't tell anybody. Yep. And then knowing that there was a lag in the data, it was literally like, all right, how can we, what's the middle ground? And so that's what the housing study came from. It's like, just now, I feel almost vindicated, like, hey, told you so, that this was going to show up, because we literally jumped manufacturing from 3,000 to 10,000. Yep. And it's not done, because I know they still don't have all of Rivian's numbers at like 7,700 alone right now. And plus, like you said, Ferrero, that's another 200. So it's gonna keep growing. We'll probably update that housing study so we don't end up overbuilding. But yeah, the public, like you said, needs to know that you can't just go build a house. you gotta plan and the
infrastructure. Unfortunately, we went into about a 10-year period where the only new homes that were by and large built were not spec homes. They were custom built design homes. Yeah. Yep. And which is a different economy and is a different speed.
Yes.
And those home builders businesses are built differently than to build spec homes. And so we just, the spec home building business and businesses who can deliver those. We're building that backup also.
Yep.
And it functions differently, and some are able to pivot their business and become spec home builders. Some don't want to and don't need to, right? And so there's also that, even if we had the lots and the land, but also everything's gotten more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And so from the time that we last had large swaths of spec homes built, the for sale prices then versus now is significantly different.
Yes.
Tap-on fees are significantly different. And
get a whole podcast on that.
Because infrastructure is not more. Gotten cheaper either, right?
Or the labor to put it in. Even if you get it approved and can fund it, like, what's the delay on the time to get some of this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, I know that banks are more than happy to lend for the homes themselves because they can, you know, get that back if there's a default. But on that infrastructure, you can't reclaim the sidewalk. It is a process, but we're glad that you guys are doing it and continue to champion this.
We're learning a lot.
Well, yeah, the experience-based learning, like lifelong learning, it never ends. And actually a good segue for the next one, though, is like what you guys already do this, but like, why does economic development matter?
Hmm. Well, that quality of place is really what matters for me as an economic driver.
Yep.
Okay, so... I think a big part of it for me personally and for my family is we're here today as the humans that we are because of the investment of the generation ahead of us who allowed us to stand on their shoulders, who had us around their dinner tables when we were in high school, who opened up their homes to us when we were young married couples and thought we knew stuff and didn't. And so for Candace and I, economic development, and she would be like, I don't even know what you're talking about, Robbie. How I'd translate that for us is we really care about the next generation, not just the three kiddos we're raising in our home, but the students in her program. I'm actively involved on campus with a few organizations. And so we've seen so much fruit in that in our own lives of people in welcoming that next generation into our lives. And so we're trying to do the same.
Yep.
And so for me, I've had the privilege of walking alongside college students, helping them navigate majors and careers and boyfriends and girlfriends and all that stuff, to then walking them through premarital counseling. And actually I'm a licensed minister, so I've officiated their weddings. I've helped them find their jobs, helped them as a realtor buy their homes. For me, I want more of those opportunities and I want that higher quality of life. Because I like replicating what people have invested in me.
Right.
I want to turn around and do that into the next generation as well. And I like being able to invite them into building a brighter Bloomington Normal with me. And so I know you guys are doing a lot of events even with that generation, you know, trying to engage them. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you first started talking about that, I'm like, this is what was done for me.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, my family is oriented around investing our lives into the lives of others. It's mm-hmm. sort of a family mission statement. And we've seen the fruit of these people who've now they now add color and flavor to our lives.
Yep.
And they're here in this community. And it's just such it's so meaningful and fun for us. And so for me, I want to see it to continue to grow. I want to see it continue to diversify. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, growing up here in Bloomington Normal, we always had Peoria News.
Okay? Right.
And so it felt like the world was rising and falling on whether Caterpillar was striking or not.
Sure.
That was always that was the big news item of, you know, when I would, you know, start the news and then I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to watch this. Yeah. And I'd walk away from, and my parents would keep watching. And I look at that we've seen similar things, right? I was here when Mitsubishi came and I was here when Mitsubishi left.
Yeah.
I've seen the rise and fall of, you know, just differences in how State Farm, does business.
Yeah.
And the health and the years of tumultuous times, I guess, for ISU and Wesleyan, right? And the years of success and favor, and so I've seen how that affects people's lives. I've seen how that disrupts people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so I'm advocating in particular for the small business community that helps fill in those gaps and makes more of a multi-legged stool than
yes.
just the two or three that get talked about a lot.
Right.
Because that is where so much of my work and my business and my life and my peers are in that space. And I feel like that's something I can really help.
Sure.
Help them recruit and retain top talent. Help them, whether that's through networking people to them or helping them with their built environment to keep them there. All of that builds that economic infrastructure and keeps people here. But all of it for me is about that quality of life.
Yep.
And about helping people realize their created purpose. And so it's just always been a passion of mine. I'll be honest, I came to EDC meetings when I was on the working at the school. I was 27 and I was like, I don't get it.
connecting all these numbers.
Just like when people tell me they were a banker, I'm like, what is that? What do you do?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You just take checks and you get money. Right. It's an ATM.
Yep.
Now I'm like,
these pro formas. Okay. Now I can see the ripple.
Wow. There's, you know, obviously the older, the wiser, hopefully, we get. And so, yeah, grateful to be a part of it. That's why I guess it matters to me.
Nice. And we didn't get to this one, but out of everything you've already said, I mean, the fun fact in general is like how diversified your background and your jobs and everything. But is there other fun personal fact that you haven't mentioned yet?
So usually when people hear my last name, Osinga, they go, "Oh, are you the musician?" And I'm like, yeah, no, nope, that's my brother. And so my brother I don't know if you've ever interviewed Mark Lockett on the podcast.
I don't think so, no.
He started a business here in town that just recently was acquired by Precision Planting. Now he helps lead their innovation for Precision Planting.
But okay.
Mark was the lead guitar player in my brother's band.
Ah.
They were playing a little Christian music festival on the south side of town at the old sale barn down there, the Shirk's property down South 51. And another band heard them play, and within a few months, they got signed to a record deal when they were seniors in high school.
Holy cow.
And moved down to Nashville, Tennessee, and toured and did three records there. And then my brothers somehow stayed in the music industry that whole time, went and played lead guitar for another couple bands, always been a singer-songwriter. Now he works for a record label and signs artists and develops artists and produces records and that kind of stuff. And so most of the time when people hear the name, they're like, oh, yeah, I know. You're the musician, right? I'm not. That's.
But you're both developing talent.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, our days are very similar. Yeah. Different outputs.
Yeah, different
very,
outputs.
Very similar. And so I guess the unique thing about me is that I'm not my brother.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful that I'm his.
Yeah, that's awesome. Juan, if there's anything else you wanted to cover, but thanks for coming on.
Hey, you bet, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Tune in next week as we continue to take an inside look at Bloomington Normal's economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners, and learn more about our BN Advantage.